Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm representing John Clifford, the appellant in this matter. This matter was brought as a result of Mr. Clifford is a farmer. He grows seed corn, which is a rather specialized type of farming. As part of that, he was having an issue. He consulted the appellee's advisor. That advisor suggested to him a certain course of herbicide treatment for the weed problem he was experiencing. He checked with his seed corn company. He eventually ordered the treatment that had been recommended, and as a result thereof, he ended up with significant death in some of his fields.
So I have a question. I'm not sure how this man pronounces it. Mr.
Geneser.
Geneser. Okay, so one of the arguments that your opponents make is that even if we took Mr. Geneser's testimony, you still haven't shown why, I'll call it the Roundup, why the this very toxic compound reached the crops. You know, where did it come from? Have you shown by evidence that would be worthy of sending to a jury that it came from this company that did the mixing, crop production services? So that's a concern of mine about this case.
Your Honor,
it looks like the concentration levels are very low. And do we have evidence that that low of a concentration of Roundup would cause this much damage to crops?
No, Your Honor, not specifically regarding that concentration. What we have is Mr. Geneser's testimony that the defendants are trying to rely on a number of different reasons why it could be something else. And, in fact, Mr. Geneser testifies that when he saw this same concentration of the chemical that was supposed to be applied in other fields, there was no killing of the crop as occurred here.
It's a ruled-out kind of testimony. But I guess what I'm concerned about is, if you're going to hold, if you're going to assume that somehow crop production services delivered an herbicide that included the Roundup in it, glyphosate in it, don't we need to show that they did that? I mean, don't we need to show that they delivered enough to kill off this one field and severely damage the other?
Your Honor, I believe we can show that they delivered that. Because if you look at what's been put forth as all the alternatives of what it could have been other than that, it simply does not apply in this case factually.
Why couldn't it have been in Mr. Clifford's tank?
Because if it were in Mr. Clifford's tank, Your Honor, what we're talking about is spraying on different days. If it were in his tank, it would have been blown out the first time that he did it, and he would have had a kill in one location, not over the continuous days.
And is there testimony to back up what you just, I mean, it makes sense to me intuitively, but
it's Mr. Clifford's testimony. In fact, that this, he used the same tank, he used the same equipment.
What is Geneser's role?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
What is Geneser's role?
He works for the seed corn company.
No. What's his role in the litigation? Why do you need him? Can Clifford, by his own testimony, rule out all the alternative theories of how the crop was contaminated?
He can, Your Honor, but Mr. Geneser's testimony is relevant to the, in that he observed.
Is it essential, Geneser's testimony?
I believe it is, yes, Your Honor.
What is the essential part of it?
The essential part is that he saw the other two herbicides that were applied to seed corn, and they did not kill this specific variety of seed corn.
And these are the ones that the bags of the seed corn had warned about. You know, one of them, I forget all these words, but one of the things that crop production argues is that the male seed corn was sensitive to one thing and the female seed corn was sensitive to something else, and those were both in the herbicides that Mr. Clifford ordered.
Yes, Your Honor, and this gets back to why Mr. Geneser is important, because even though that they were sensitive to it, Monsanto, who Mr. Clifford was growing for, controls and tells him what he can and cannot apply, which is why he called to make sure it was okay. This same combination of herbicides were used in other fields, and that is what Mr. Geneser can testify to.
With the same corn.
With the same variety of corn that Mr. Clifford was growing, and it did not cause the yield loss, or certainly not the crop destruction that occurred in the case of Mr. Clifford.
So you're saying that Genizer would just be testifying to something he saw?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would he have to have any knowledge, or would he just be looking and seeing I suppose he'd have to be able to distinguish male from female corn, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but that would be very easy at this point.
So if he does that, then he's simply reporting an observation. He sees that he knows what herbicides have been applied, and he sees that it's killing the male corn. Is that it?
Yes, Your Honor, and he's also
saying. I mean, it looked to me like the things he was saying were coming across anyway to me as much more technical, including that there are times when it's advisable for a grower to use an herbicide with restrictions. Other seed corn growers from Monsanto use a similar blend as that Mr. Clifford used. He observes the two types of injury. The sulfonylurea injury he observes is to the weeds, not the corn. He's never observed wilted brown whorls in corn plants as a result of these things. I mean, I don't know. Maybe everybody in central Illinois knows all of that, but I sure don't.
Your Honor, he did testify to those things also, but the question was what was central of his testimony to our case, and for our case it was
and this is where it gets to the issue of failure to notify him as an expert, wouldn't it be important what kind of background he has, what kind of training, what kind of experience? Wouldn't that be important to a jury to know whether to believe him when he talks about what he saw?
Yes, and his background and experience and education all came out in his deposition.
You're supposed to provide the expert report.
Well, but maybe not, because there's a disclosure requirement for experts, but the rules are about to be changed December 1st to clarify something. A written report under 26A2B is required only if the witness is one retained or specially employed to provide expert testimony in the case, or one whose duties as the party's employee regularly involve giving expert testimony. Well, Mr. Genizer is none of those. He wasn't retained as an expert. He's a third-party expert, in other words. He's like a treating physician. And so the new rules are going to clarify what kind of disclosure for somebody who doesn't have to provide a report needs to give. But Mr. Genizer is in this interesting intermediate category under the rules. He should have been disclosed as an expert if you were planning on using him for 702 evidence, for sure, but maybe no written report would have been required.
How did you show that the defendant did something wrong?
Well, if you look, Your Honor, in the record, there's evidence that these plants were tested and there was the presence of Roundup in the plants. The way Roundup works is that it...
Well, what's wrong with that? Well, why would that mean that they did something wrong?
Because Roundup will kill the plants. And it's...
So just because Roundup is in there, that automatically meant they did something wrong? Isn't that strict liability?
Well, if we didn't order the Roundup, we wouldn't ever knowingly order Roundup to be applied to the plants, because we know it would kill the plants. We specifically ordered a different blend of chemicals that was not...
So just because it was there, that means automatically they're negligent? Is that your theory?
Essentially, in this case, yes, Your Honor, because we specifically ordered...
Don't you have to show that there was some standard that they didn't meet, or that they didn't separate it right, or they didn't do something else? I mean, don't you have to? This is a negligence case, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but the mere presence of putting Roundup in it, we believe, is evidence of the negligence, because
innocent explanation of how it could get there.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
There's no possible innocent explanation of how it could get there.
No, Your Honor.
Well, you're saying
so it's sort of res ipsa loquitur sort of thing that.
The Roundup kills the
itself, demonstrates negligence.
Yes, because it has a devastating effect on the field, as evidenced by the fact that it killed it.
And you're, I mean, as I understand your argument anyway, it's as though a pharmacist mixed a little bit of arsenic in with a prescription that he was preparing accidentally. And, of course, arsenic is really unhealthy.
Exactly, Your Honor.
To people.
And that's essentially arsenic. Roundup is arsenic for seed corn. Thank you.
But even in that case, of course, one would say, well, the way pharmacists are trained, the way drugs are mixed and so on, there really is no innocent explanation. Do we know enough about this process here to draw that inference, or is that something Janisa was going to testify about?
No, Your Honor, Mr. Janisa was not going to testify regarding that.
All he was going to testify was about what he saw in other fields?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Clifford. Mr. Van Oort?
May it please the Court, the District Court correctly granted summary judgment for crop production services because, with or without the testimony of Mr. Janisa, Mr. Clifford failed to offer any proof that would allow a reasonable jury to rule for him on either the duty of care, the breach of the duty of care, or causation. And what happened here, Your Honor, is that Mr. Clifford applied two chemicals to his corn that wouldn't affect ordinary corn.
But apparently there's at least a dispute about whether those two chemicals, that is to say not the Roundup, could have caused the harm that they did in fact cause. And so one is left to say, well, if that's disputed, then the Roundup had to have come from somewhere. There's evidence in the record that there was also the I'm not even sure how to pronounce this. Glyphosate.
It's glyphosate, Your Honor.
Glyphosate. So what worries me is in fact, Mr. Janisa's role, because I looked through the district court's opinion, and I couldn't find any place where the district judge made a finding about harmless error. And if you assume that Mr. Janisa is an expert whose name should have been disclosed under A2 capital A, but if you also further realize that Mr. Janisa is not somebody retained, specially employed, or Mr. Clifford's employee, you had a deposition of Mr. Janisa. You had plenty of opportunity to probe, you know, what he thought, you know, who he was, all the rest of it. Isn't it troubling that there's no harmless error determination? I mean, we would probably defer to it one way or the other if the district judge had offered an opinion, but he doesn't.
Your Honor, I don't think it's troubling because this court, in a case we cite, it's called David versus Caterpillar, we cite it at page 21 of our brief, has said that in this context of deciding whether to exclude an expert, a district court doesn't have to make explicit findings on harmless error or prejudice.
We can see that perhaps the functional equivalent of everything you would have been entitled to anyway with respect to Mr. Janisa happened. Namely,
yeah.
You knew who he was, you knew he was going to be a witness, you took his deposition, you knew what he was going to say, you had a chance to prepare whatever and did, you know, you hired your own people.
Yeah, Your Honor, our claim of prejudice isn't based on the lack of a report because we agree with how Your Honor is reading the rules on this. Our claim of prejudice is based on what this court has said before, and that is because he wasn't disclosed as an expert, we didn't depose him as an expert and didn't try to disclose the foundations of his opinions because he hadn't disclosed that he's going to have opinions. This court has said that's prejudice before.
But you knew what he was going to test. You don't agree, I take it, with your opponent, Mr. Schurter, that he's just going to talk about what he saw. The corn was stunted.
Certainly not. And as we said in our brief, Your Honor, what he is doing is classic expert testimony. That is, he's applying specialized knowledge that he had about herbicides because of his experience with Monsanto, and he's applying it to this particular field. Now, anybody could walk up to the field and say, I see brown corn there. But nobody who, unless they're an expert in herbicides, could say, this is the type of damage to corn that only comes from one particular kind of herbicide.
But I have trouble believing that when you were taking his deposition, he was testifying to these things, that a little light bulb, you know, didn't go off in your head where you at least said, how do you know that? or something. What's your? You probably start out the deposition. Who do you work for? What's your job? You know, the usual stuff.
There's no doubt that, Your Honor, that we inquired into some of the areas of the testimony. But this court has said that's not enough. That just because you get a chance to depose a lay witness, that doesn't cure the prejudice because you don't treat him the same way as an expert. Another form of prejudice, Your Honor, is that we didn't have an opportunity to file a Daubert motion against him because he wasn't ever disclosed or used as an expert. And this court has said that's prejudice. You know, and this is the Musser case, and we cite it, and what the court has said is the rules are there for a reason.
But what information would a 702 motion have revealed that you didn't already have? You must have known what his job was, what he did for Monsanto, you know, the kinds of things that, if you will, a Daubert motion would have brought out. What else were you looking for?
Well, Your Honor, it's
like a treating physician. Yeah, I mean, maybe you don't disclose that person as an expert, but it's obvious. The person has, you know, you say, who are you? I'm an MD. You know, I got it from the University of Pennsylvania or wherever they went.
Yeah, Your Honor, and we certainly were able to disclose some of his background. You know, had he been disclosed as a formal expert, we would have gone further into the basis for his opinions and how his specific expertise related to that as well as his qualifications. And we would have brought a Daubert motion.
What is his job for Monsanto?
His job for Monsanto, as I understand it, Your Honor, is he has worked as a supervisor for some of the people working with their seed corn. And so in connection with that, he has seen some background of herbicides, but he doesn't have an advanced degree like our expert had in this, and we didn't think he was fully qualified to distinguish between the types of herbicide.
That
sounds pretty tenuous, actually. I mean, it must be very important in his job to know what causes the corn. Look, Monsanto is selling corn to these people, and when the corn turns brown and they call him up and so on, he must know a lot about how you diagnose sick corn.
Yeah. Your Honors, in addition, even if Mr. Genizer's testimony was properly admitted here, Mr. Clifford still has no evidence whatsoever on two elements of his claim, and that is duty of care, because Mr. Genizer doesn't address what the standard was for operating this mixing equipment. Your Honor had asked about this. What the record shows is that there is an affidavit from the gentleman who operated it about an automatic water flush.
Is it a mixing thing?
It looks like a big steel cup about this big, and there are a lot of hoses coming into it. And it has an automatic wash cycle that comes through after you mix this, and then he does a manual flush, and then he blew it out with air. There's no evidence on whether that failed to meet the standard of care that you should have done. And they didn't bring a strict liability claim here. They brought negligence, and so they have to show fault. And in this sort of situation, you can't show fault without an expert because there was nobody in the record who said this flushing, that what he did wasn't enough. And there were over 200 loads of chemicals dispensed in this time frame, Your Honor, and nobody else complained about contamination. They just don't have any evidence on that part of causation, that this glyphosate actually came from crop production services or that there was a duty of care there.
Did they bring a race ipsa? They didn't bring that?
No, they didn't argue that, Your Honor. They also didn't argue.
I'm bothered by another alternative argument of yours about the economic loss rule. I don't get that at all.
Yeah,
this is property damage. It's not economic loss.
Well, Your Honor, in 1997, the Illinois Supreme Court addressed two certified questions directly on economic loss doctrine. One of them came from the Chicago floods. And in that case, the court held that damage even to other property is barred by the economic loss doctrine if it's the kind of damage that you would expect from an ordinary failure of a product. And it said the same thing in connection with the Transtate case. And this is the Illinois Supreme Court. They said, it seems reasonable to us that the economic loss doctrine should bar tort recovery when a defective product causes the type of damage one would reasonably expect as a direct consequence of the failure of the defective product.
Well,
so,
I don't understand that. I mean, that's like saying there's no medical malpractice tort anymore.
Well, they distinguish personal injury, Your Honor.
Because the surgeon cut the wrong thing, and then you say, "Well, that's the sort of thing that happens when you have a mistaken operation. The patient dies, right? So it's just contract. You should have negotiated with the doctor. You should have said, "Well, if I die because of your negligence, do I get damages?" And that'd be right.
The Supreme Court of Illinois has distinguished between personal injury and property damage.
Right.
And as to personal injury, you're absolutely right. Property damage is different.
What sense does that make? So if someone is working on your building and causes enormous property damage, there's no tort remedy?
Well, Your Honor, the sense, as I understand it from the Illinois Supreme Court, as they set their policies, they said personal injuries are different in kind, and we're going to exclude them because we aren't going to require people to.
Now you're saying there are no torts of property damage.
Certainly not, Your Honor, because there's an exception for this.
What's left?
The requirement, Your Honor, is a sudden and dangerous occurrence that causes property damage. And when it's not sudden or dangerous.
What about nuisance? That's not sudden. There's no principle of tort that says only sudden events are tortious.
No, certainly not, but that is the principle of the economic loss doctrine.
No, and it's the principle of the economic loss doctrine is where you do not have physical harm to the property of the plaintiff. That's the economic loss doctrine, right? So if a building crane collapses in front of a person's store, doesn't damage the store, but nobody can get in and out, so the owner incurs business losses, that's economic loss. Once you have property damage, tortious damage to your property, you can obtain all your losses.
Your Honor, my time has expired, but may I answer?
Of course. Otherwise, I wouldn't ask you, right?
Thank you.
I asked you a question I didn't want to answer? A rhetorical question.
The first one wasn't rhetorical. The second one was. Your Honor, what you described the doctrine is as it originally developed, but the Illinois Supreme Court has taken it another step. And it said because of the same policies of wanting to reconcile tort law with the UCC and the ability in commercial transactions to limit your loss, that we think the same principles of foreseeability apply to other property that you would expect to be damaged from the operation of a product.
You can, of course, waive negligence liability for property loss.
On that. Well, there certainly were
That's
limitations on
that. Saying that if there's no waiver, nevertheless, you can't sue in tort.
No, and to be clear, Mr. Clifford could sue in tort if he had damage in a way that damage was caused unexpected by the herbicide. But the whole point of herbicide is it's supposed to kill your weeds without killing your crops. It can go wrong in only one of two ways. It doesn't kill your weeds or it kills your crops. And that's foreseeable, and it's commercial, and they address it in the transaction. And that's why all of these cases, all of these states that we've cited to you, apply the economic loss doctrine in this situation from herbicides to crops.
I can't believe it, actually. This is completely contrary to the economic loss doctrine. But maybe it's, maybe Illinois is special. We'll certainly consider that. Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Schroeder?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Further? Okay. Well, thank you to both counsel.